Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Greetings, music nerds, and welcome to Season 6 of Music Makers and Soul Shakers. I am your host, Steve Dawson, coming to you from the Hen House Studio here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm really excited to be bringing you this new season of shows coming to you on the first and third Wednesdays of every month. I have a great lineup of fascinating conversations with incredible musicians, songwriters, guitarists, steel guitarists, drummers, composers, who knows what else. I've been having an incredible time diving deep with these folks, and I know you're going to enjoy listening. Just a reminder that this year I've taken out the short song samples through the show, as things have gotten way more complicated as far as legal use of music goes, so I'll be making an accompanying Spotify playlist to each episode, which you'll find in the episode's show notes and at the website at makersandshakerspodcast.com. So anytime you hear this cute little slide guitar sound, you'll know there's a track to go along with it on the playlist. We have some new sponsors this year, but continue to be largely listener-supported. Your help in keeping the show going is always appreciated, and you can do it with a one-time donation or a Patreon subscription. Patreon is a monthly payment of your choice, and when you sign up for that, you get a bit of added content as well as an ad-free version of the show to listen to. If you don't feel like kicking in any dough, that's cool too, but you can help by subscribing for free on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just spread the word by sharing the show, following us on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and telling all your pals about it. You can get links to all this stuff, of course, at makersandshakerspodcast.com. Meanwhile, many thanks to our sponsors this season. Please check them out and let them know that I sent you. They are Isotope, Ear Trumpet Labs, Union Tube and Transistor, Black Mountain Picks, and Spectra 1964. Hey there, folks and music nerds. Welcome back to Season 6 of the show. So glad you could join me today. This is episode number 128. And my guest today is someone whose music I was introduced to fairly recently. She's a killer steel player. And she's been living and working out of Austin, Texas for quite a few years, and her name is Rose Sinclair. We had this conversation over Zoom a few months back, and I'm thrilled to be bringing it to you today. So, hope everyone's doing well out there, and I hope all you music folks are getting back to it. I've been working fairly solidly, I guess, and pretty grateful for that. I'm not touring as much as I was before, but I'm in the studio quite a bit these days, so I'm getting by on sessions and mixing and some remote work still, which is sort of a weird holdover of the COVID era, I guess. Touring's weird these days. I don't know. I'm hoping things chill out a bit on the whole expense level side of things. It's so bonkers out there, and trying to make all that work anymore is almost impossible, it seems to me. Fees haven't really gone up for musicians and bands, although they kind of have for the upper echelon of bands. I've really noticed the people that are like at the top are making kind of obscene amounts of money, and most of us working stiff musicians are making the same as what we did pre-pandemic, but everything's way more expensive now. And so that makes touring with a band almost, I find, prohibitively expensive these days. That said, it seems like everyone is out there going full tilt. That's the impression I get. So I guess that's good for all you touring folks out there. Keep her up. And, I just wanted to point out that the Hen House Hang that you've been hearing about this season now has some 2023 dates. And although it's a little early for that, we are now going to be openly booking those spots. So if you're interested in getting in on the Hen House Hang in 2023, that's going to be September 18 to 21, right after the Americana Fest here in Nashville, 2023. Okay, so Rose Sinclair, I first heard about her in one of those guitar magazines a while back. I read something about her and she sounded interesting, so I got her latest album, which is called Wave. There's some debate about whether it's an album or an EP, but we get into that. And she refers to her current music as cocktail swing, and I can get with that. But they're basically playing jazz standards with most of the heads and a lot of the solos being played on the steel, although there's sax and piano on the record and drums and bass. And Rose plays a classic double neck steel with no pedals. She doesn't use any effects. She doesn't even use a volume pedal. And she's just really forged a really cool style and sound and a voice of her own. And that's a tricky thing to do on a non-pedal steel, I'll tell ya. She started out as a multi-instrumentalist, playing bass, guitar, banjo, and even accordion in bands around Massachusetts, where she's originally from. And she eventually got into the steel, as you'll hear in our conversation, and that led to her moving to Austin, Texas, to immerse herself in Western swing music. And, you know, another really fascinating element about Rose's career is that she's really dug into the roots of the style and tracked down some of the original generation of steel players and actually had a chance to study with them and hang out with them. So we talk about that a fair chunk, too, and I find that fascinating. So that's players like Maurice Anderson, Pee Wee Whitewing, and Herb Steiner are some of the people that she has spent a lot of time with. Rose is actively making records out of Austin, and she has a weekly gig at Sam's Town Point, also in Austin. So please check out her amazing record Wave, which I love, and you can find out about her new projects, which she has going now, and any touring she might be doing. I'm not sure if she is currently or not, but I don't think so. She's mostly hanging around in Austin, but if she is out there, you can find all that at rosesinclairmusic.com. And finally, before we get going, I would just like to put a shout out to the following folks who made donations or signed up to the Patreon over the last couple of weeks: Amanda Zimmerman and Gerald Palmer. Thank you, guys. I couldn't do it without you. And also, just wanted to let you know once again that we are giving away a really cool Union Tube and Transistor C-Verb, which is their first foray into digital effects. It's a reverb pedal. At the end of the season, we're going to pick a random Patreon subscriber. So if you've already subscribed or do so before the end of season 6, you'll be enrolled in that giveaway. And thanks to Union Tube and Transistor out of Vancouver for supplying the pedal to give away. All right, let's get down to it. Please enjoy my conversation with Rose Sinclair. So yeah, I've been, I love the, I don't know if you're considering it an LP or an EP, but Wave is, I guess it's sort of an EP.
It's an EP, but it's a little record, and I've gotten into this thing about, you know, with the COVID and everything, like what to, you know, how to keep, how to navigate through and be a musician. And all of a sudden I'm on this thing where I want to do these little small batch records.
That's a cool idea.
That's the first one. And I have a second one in mind already, and that I'm excited about. And so I'm just going to do, I don't know. It's pretty, it's fun to think about. And I'm glad that I can, you know, I feel like I'm coming back alive, you know, after a couple of years just of being like a dial tone. Yeah. And, so it's exciting that way.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about that record. And then, you know, I'd love to talk about your history a little bit, which is interesting, I find. You know, there's not a lot out there about you, so I'd like to find out. But as far as the Wave EP, or I don't know, let's call it an album. So as far as the Wave album goes, did you do it in lockdown? Like, were you doing it remotely, or did you have the band together in the room with you?
Oh no, we all put on our masks and piled into the studio and did it. You know, just did it live and all that. And
so were you? Which studio were you in?
It's Chris Burns is the engineer, and he runs this studio, Ameripolitan Studios, which is it was in Dale Watson's backyard, actually.
Okay.
And but I mean, Dale Watson has since sold the house that's in front, but the studio remains in the back. Chris Burns made a deal with the new owners, and
oh, cool!
So he can keep recording there. And
is it right in Austin, or is it out in the?
Yeah, okay. Right in North Austin.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, real easy to easy for everyone to get to, and just no stress. And Chris Burns is fun to work with, and very laid back, and mm-hmm. so willing to kind of try anything. So it's neat.
Because I got that record on Apple Music, I don't have the credits or anything. So can you tell me who the band is and whether that's a regular band for you or if these were new people like the sax player and the bass player and all that? Like who are all those people?
Oh, well, the sax player is Lion Gralty. And funny enough, we used to play together 10 or more years ago. We were both living in the Northeast in Western Massachusetts. And we were playing like little, basically cocktail steel, we were into playing old twin guitar tunes, Western swing twin guitar tunes, and playing standards. And he would play guitar. He mostly played guitar in that because we were working out the twin parts.
Yep.
And it was hard to, like up there, you basically had, you know, there was, well, like musicians everywhere, there's no money. And we had to drive everywhere, you know. That's the beauty of being in Austin. You just have to go across town to play. But there you had to go across the state. And so
I'm from Canada originally. So tell me about it.
Okay. You have to drive across the province. So we had a rhythm section in the western part of the state and a rhythm section in the eastern part of the state.
Oh, wow.
And so Lion and I would just, you know, we'd parachute in with our charts and play either east or west with the different rhythm sections. It just seemed to work out that way. And then he moved to Austin, and then I eventually moved to Austin a couple years after him.
Okay.
And now we play together again. So it's kind of cool.
He's the guitar player on that.
Guitar and sax.
Okay. Oh, and sax. Oh, wow. Cool. Talented.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. He's mostly known as a horn guy here in Austin.
Okay.
And a lot of people didn't even realize he played guitar, and I knew him as a guitar player. So it was, he likes that he could do both, you
right.
know, and he's a very talented guy. And then the piano player is Dan Walton, who spent 7 years playing with Asleep at the Wheel. And is a super talented guy, plays in a lot of the swing bands all over the country, actually. And he's also a good B3 organ player. That's going to be the future project that's in the
nice.
Pipeline. And Jason Baczynski is on the drums, and he's currently touring with Asleep at the Wheel. And excellent.
Seems like Asleep at the Wheel just pilfers every good swing player in Texas at some point in their life.
Well, they yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And then the bass player is Michael Archer, who's he's from Canada, actually. Originally he moved down here. He's married to, I don't mean to be sexist, but he's married to Emily Gimble, who's a great piano player and Western swing royalty here, Johnny Gimble's granddaughter.
Oh,
and
cool.
And she's a fabulous talent. She was a Texas Musician of the Year and all kinds of stuff. But anyway, he's a great bass player and a super nice guy. And so, you know, the chemistry was great. And we were just playing every week at this little roadhouse in South Austin called Samstown Point. And just during COVID. And so, you know, we get about five people at the show. I mean, it was all outside. We could keep playing outside. And we just started working on these tunes. And I think with COVID, like all bets were off. Nobody was touring. And so in that case, it was you were kind of free to do whatever you wanted to do. And whatever you wanted to work on. And so we were just, of course, I just wanted to work on these big band tunes. And then I started getting into bossa novas, and these guys are so talented. I mean, I could just, whatever I would work up, they could jump right in. And they either already knew it or they knew what to do. So it was super fun, super fun.
So as far as the tunes go, like, I don't know all the songs on the record, but the ones that I do know are kind of standards, not necessarily steel guitar standards, but like jazz standards or whatever.
Yeah.
What's your process of digging around, finding songs for both for the steel, but also for that kind of a ensemble?
Well, I actually was pretty inspired by, I started going to the steel guitar conventions. You know,
what's that scene like? I've always wondered.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a real steel guitar geek out weekend. Yeah. You know, you've got hundreds of steel guitar players in one space and
a lot of dudes.
There's a handful of women, but yeah, it's definitely Dudeville, but it's all good natured. They accept me. It's a very high geek factor. What's cool about that is that they have a big house band, and man, you hear all kinds of tunes. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear a lot of Western swing and country, and then you hear a lot of jazz, a lot of standards. Yeah. And so I was inspired by listening to those guys play. And the steel guitar conventions are great too, because you get to hang out with all the legends, and you get to hear them play. You get to hear stories. I love the histories, and just basically hang out. So it's just that it's a treasure, you know.
And there's one like up in St. Louis or something, and then are the rest in Austin? Is that or around Texas? Is that generally where they're?
Well, St. Louis was the big one for years. The last one was in I think 2015 or 2016, and they don't have that anymore. I got to play that one.
Cool.
Yeah, there was somebody canceled. And at the last minute, so they invited me to play. So it was a total thrill.
Nice.
And so St. Louis, which is not happening anymore. Dallas is a big show.
Right. That's the one I've heard of. Yeah.
Yeah. That's in March. So that's coming up next month. And that's a really big show. And then Phoenix was another big show. And Phoenix was interesting because you got all the California, the LA, you know, Southern California guys coming in for that, and you know, a lot of the
different styles,
different tunes, all the studio musicians, and so yeah, it was a different flavor. It was super fun. Bobby Black would always be there, which is, that's very motivating to go drive to Phoenix to go see Bobby Black. That motivates me. And then there's a super jam in Nashville in September usually, and Branson in July. There's one in Tulsa, Oklahoma in June. There's a Denver steel show that's in June. There's one in Southern Illinois.
There's tons.
They're sprinkled around. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one in Georgia, and there's one in, there's actually one in Rhode Island. And there's a big one in Norwalk, Connecticut in November. So they're kind of all over the place. And it's kind of a different universe. So I guess a lot of people don't know about it until you start getting into steel guitar.
Well, I play steel as well, but I've never really sort of taken the plunge into that world of like the conventions and stuff.
It's fun. You'll totally feel at home.
Okay. So just getting back to that record for a second, can you tell me a bit about how you get your sound on that record? It's really clean, but it's got some cool kind of like punchiness to it that sounds like probably an old tube amp or something. I don't really, you know, it's hard to tell a little bit, but can you tell me a bit about your actual guitar tone these days and on that record?
Actually, let me finish my thought. I got sidetracked, but I was really inspired by when I got to Austin. I used to go hear Bert Rivera play at this little restaurant, this little barbecue place. And Bert Rivera used to play for Hank Thompson. When I got here 10 years ago, he was playing, he had a little combo, and he had put out little combo jazz record of standards and that kind of thing. And so I used to go hear him play at the restaurant, and he played a lot of these tunes. And that's where I got like Canadian Sunset and, you know, some other stuff that he was a big inspiration for me. I said, that's what I want to do. I want a little combo. I want a little jazz combo, and, you know, led by the steel guitar. And of course he's playing pedals like 99% of the people out there playing pedals, but you know, you can still grab the stuff. So anyway, oh yeah, my tone is, I play double eight Fender Stringmaster. I don't use any volume pedal or anything like that. I just do it.
All with your hand.
I have some knobs, you know, a volume and tone knob, but I also, it's just in the hands. Yep. And I run it through a PV Nashville 112.
Okay.
Just a regular amp, but it's got a Telonix Neodymium speaker.
Okay.
In it,
and those are sort of tuned for a steel guitar, right?
I think this one is the Telonix folks who are great. Dave Beatty is wonderful. He's got this wonderful company out in Arizona. And they actually gave me this speaker. I mean, they installed it and everything at one of the Arizona steel guitar conventions.
Oh, cool.
And he said it was a special speaker. He said it was kind of broken in, you know, it makes sense that the, you know, the vibration and the air and everything would season a speaker. In a way.
Yeah. And also a speaker for steel has to be able to handle the range of the steel, which is a lot more than a regular guitar is. So it's not unusual that you would have to have a specialized speaker.
Well, the thing that's great about this speaker is it took all the woof out of the mid range and cleared it up. And, I just think it has a beautiful tone and, like a little shout out to Telonix.
Yeah, yeah. You've got a bit of reverb on there, I guess. There's no delays or anything. You're just playing straight into the amp.
Just straight from the amp. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty bare bones.
Cool. So when you were tracking that record, did you like, was most of it tracked live as far as the band goes?
Yeah.
And then with your, like, did you go back and work on your parts or anything, or was it all pretty much just live performance straight up?
I went back and fixed a couple little, you know, bloopers.
Things that were
otherwise it was live.
Yeah.
And Lion Gralty, the sax player, he came back and just played a bunch of sax over the top, you know. But other than that, it was live.
Cool. So what's your process for like doing your arrangements as far as the steel goes? Like, so you've got a double eight, so you're using C6 and do you use E11 as like the standard kind of double eight, or what's your tuning situation?
I'm using A6.
Okay.
And E13. And the A6, I mean, the A6, I started, I know most of the world uses the C6.
Yeah.
I use the A6 because I was listening to Noah Boggs play on Bob Wills Records and Herb Remington play on Bob Wills Records, and they were playing an A6. I didn't know. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
I said, okay, that sounds good to me.
So what is A6 from low to high?
It's F sharp, A, C sharp, E, F sharp, A,
okay.
C sharp, E.
So it's tuned kind of higher than a C6 tuning.
It's actually lower.
Oh, it's lower. Okay. So you've got a low F sharp, like a big fat string.
Yeah, I
on
like,
that F
sharp. And that's, okay. That's kind of what I'm going for, is like a more of a low, warm tone, low and more jazzy kind of tone.
Do you lean on one of those necks more than the other, or are you pretty much,
yeah.
Which
the
one?
The A6 is my safety neck. I mean, that's where I play all my melodies and stuff like that. And then the E13 is more of a strum for doing like boo-wah kind of chords,
yep.
And you know, bar slams or doing sort of a chordal solo. You know, I'm not very good at soloing on the E13. That's a tough neck. I mean,
the A6 is your comfort zone for sure.
Yeah, that's my comfort.
And then like pickups and all that is that all stock with the guitar?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so that's just straight up tone. That's awesome. Do you use finger picks or are you using bare fingers?
Oh, I'm using picks.
Okay.
I've got a thumb pick and two fingers.
Two fingers, yeah.
Yeah, I know some people use three finger picks, and I tried that. Maurice Anderson, who I studied with for a while, he said, just put the pick on there and just wear it. And after a while, you'll start using it.
Yeah.
And I tried, but it just kept getting in the way, and I couldn't get to using it. But there's always time. I could, you know, I might be able to. I do love the bit more complex chords, but you know, with a bass player, you know, you can actually get a pretty good spread of a chord.
Yeah.
You know, working with other people. So.
Yeah, totally. Can you just talk a little bit about the history of steel guitar as far as it relates to Austin? Like, there's just such a rich history there, and there's a lot of players that are totally under the radar for a lot of people that just, you know, don't know some of these guys. And I know that you had a chance to study with some of these, you know, like players from a whole different generation that were really influential. Can you maybe talk a little bit about who those people were and what your experiences were actually meeting some of those older generation folks?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a big reason why I moved to Texas, was to seek out, the guys that were basically invented the style of playing Western swing. I mean, one of the first guys I looked up was actually in Louisiana, Pee Wee Whitewing, who played for Hank Thompson. And back when he was running a band, and he had two steel players. Pee Wee was one of them, and they played big band charts, and the steels were playing twin steel kind of horn parts and really cool stuff. And
like, he was still doing that band when you met him?
No, that band.
Oh, that was back in the day.
Back in the day. And okay. What's neat about meeting the older players is that they all were playing straight steel, which is, you know, without pedals. And then in the 50s, they all went to pedals because that's what was happening. And then, but they all, you know, a lot of them have moved back to straight steel again. But for me as a non-pedal player, it's really interesting to watch them play because they come from straight steel. So they've got certain techniques that somebody who just plays pedal steel might not have that approach. You know, they've got straight steel approaches that I can grok, you know. And
would that be stuff like slants and things that you wouldn't really do as much on a pedal, that you do more on a
yeah, yeah,
steel?
Well, a lot, yeah, of slants and grips and uh-huh, and different effects or whatever, you know, sound, yeah. But like Pee-wee Whitewing,
that's the greatest steel player name of all time, actually.
Oh yeah, well, he's Native American. He grew up in Eastern Oklahoma, and like, I love hearing the stories. Well, he left Oklahoma with his family. He was 6 years old during the Dust Bowl.
Oh man.
I know. So you get to hear, I mean, it was fascinating just to.
So what was his history? He went from Oklahoma to like California or something?
Yes. He went to Southern California. He said his family went to Southern California to be prune pickers is what, yeah, he said. Prune pickers. And he ended up meeting Bobby and Larry Black brothers. They were teenagers, 12, 13 years old, and started playing in the clubs.
Mm, wow.
And Bobby and Pee Wee were playing straight steels, and Larry Black was a great standard guitar player. And,
yeah,
and they came up with these incredible duo and trio parts, you know, twin and trio parts in these tunes, playing Western swing. And
did they make records as that trio?
Well, they made records, well, not records, but there is recordings of them live on the radio later on, called the West Coast All Stars.
Okay.
And they used to play dances at the different ballrooms, and Bobby Black's father recorded it live off the radio. And I happen to have one of them. I have it recorded. It's just like five or six tunes, but to me, it's like, it's a complete, it's like a treasure. You know, I love listening to it. And they do a lot of the songs that I like to do, like September in the Rain.
Okay,
and
cool.
Just really, really great stuff.
So where did you meet him? Like, did you have to sort of hunt him down, or was he just playing somewhere? Or what was the deal?
No, some friends of mine in Louisiana introduced me to him. We had a little gathering, and so we sat around and kind of jammed. We had a little jam session.
He was still actively playing, or was he kind of retired?
No, he was playing once in a while and making like little jazz records, little recordings with, he had some guys that he played with. And then he would do a yearly show at the Rice Theater in Crowley, Louisiana.
Okay.
And it was, and he'd have a lot of guest singers and stuff like that. And
yeah.
So he was still active. I mean, he was in, I think in his 80s at that point, but still picking. Yeah, it's picking great.
So did you actually take any lessons from him, or was it more of just kind of a hang?
Well, with him, it was more of a hang. And I went to his workplace, and he had a 12-string lap steel that he'd put out on his desk. And he would just start playing. Like, he wasn't into giving lessons, but he would start playing some stuff.
Yeah.
And he was playing these amazing chords, you know, all these major nines and sevens and stuff like that. And, you know, I just hadn't, just to see someone do that on this slab of wood with 12 strings, it was astounding to me. And it was so beautiful. And after that one particular time, I was driving back on I-10 to Lafayette, to where I was staying. And I just had to pulled off the highway and cried for about 10 minutes. just even thinking about it now, it was such amazing, beautiful music. And it just tore me right open, you know? So I that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
And so, you know, in Texas, I was studying with Maurice Anderson up in Dallas, and I'd come down like once or twice a year and stay at his house. His wife, Teresa Anderson, is a great singer. And so they would kind of host me, and I would take lessons with Maurice. You know, like I'd show up a few days before the Dallas show for the Dallas Steel Convention, or before the big Western Swing Festival in Wichita Falls. I'd just go to have lessons with Maurice for a couple of days. And they'd put me up in a little room. I'd sleep upstairs in a little room. And we would have lessons like 9 to 5 with a lunch break. One-on-one.
Yeah.
And he'd go as fast or as slow as I wanted to go. And it was just great. I mean, all kinds of theory, and we would just go down all these different trails, and then we'd have a little bit of supper. Then I'd go up to my room, and I was recording everything, of course, and I'd dump it on my laptop, and then I'd try to label everything, you know, like what the heck was that, you know. I'd just give it different names so I could look it up later. And it was amazing. It was like going to college, and you know, steel guitar college. And Reese was a great teacher.
What was his history? Where, like, who had he played with?
He played for Bob Wills. He was later on. He and Gene Cronwell played double steels.
Yeah,
with Bob Wills, and there's a great
amazing
cut. Yeah, there's a great cut on YouTube. There's a clip of the Big D Jamboree, which is a Dallas TV show back then, where they're playing. And yeah, it was pretty cool. It's pretty cool. He said he was going to get on the bus the first time with Bob Wills, and Bob said, well, all my guys play Fenders. You know, Fender was sort of sponsoring the band. And he said, yeah, but, you know, I need 10 strings to do what I do. And so Bob got on the phone, and I guess Mr. Fender built him a 10-string guitar. And he got that made for Maurice. Pretty
thanks,
cool.
Leo. That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool.
So was he an A6 guy as well? Is that sort of why you leaned into those tunings? Is like, were your teachers?
Well, he played more of a like an extended C6 tuning.
Okay, so and he was a ten string single neck guy. That was his deal.
I think he had two necks. I think he had two necks going on with Bob. Yeah. I can't exactly remember, but he can. He since then, he had a steel guitar company called MSA that built steels.
Oh, I had an MSA.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So he was building a single neck. They could be 10 or 12, you know, you could add strings the way they were doing. It was sort of modular the way that they made it. I mean, it had a, oh man, I can't. Anyway, you could have 10 or 12 strings on
right,
it.
Right.
When I did lessons with him, I had one neck. I had a big triple neck, 8, 8, 10. So I would use my 10 string neck and tune it to C, you know, a C6 tuning, extended C6 tuning like he had to take lessons with him.
And then can you just shift what you know on a C6 tuning down into the A6 tuning? Does it work that way or is it? It is. Okay. So it's the same thing, just shift it down a minor third.
Yeah. Actually, I'd have to move up the neck. I know it doesn't make sense, but I'd have to move three frets up or something.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And was Herb Steiner another guy that you took lessons from?
Herb Steiner and Denny Mathis. They're both Texas Steel Guitar Hall of Famers. I took lessons with Herb and
What was his deal? What was he like?
Well, he's a funny guy. We're great friends. He played with Michael Martin Murphy, and he started playing with Linda Ronstadt like way back when he was learning the steel. And and then he played with Alvin Crowe. He played with Johnny Bush for 14 years. And so he really liked the swing tunes too. He liked the standards.
Yeah.
So I learned a bunch of his tunes. And, you know, he also kind of introduced me around to Western Swing Society in Austin and, you know, turned me on to like, oh, you know, who to go listen to and, you know, who's playing where and all that. So that was super fun. And, it's great to have a mentor like that. I'm very lucky. And
no doubt.
And then Denny Mathis, another Texas Steel Guitar Hall of Famer. He lives in San Antonio. So I used to go down there. It was a couple hour drive, and a half. And, he had been teaching for 40 or 50 years in the same little mom and pop music store called the Delview Music School in this little shopping center in San Antonio. And, you know, I would just, you know, I'd call down there and say, hey, Gail, this is Rose up in Austin. And yes, how's it going? And then I'd say, does Denny have any time? And he said, well, he's got like an hour and a half. Like usually it was $15 for half an hour, you know? So I would just book whatever he had, you know.
Cost more in gas to get there.
I know. So I'd usually go down for an hour and a half, you know, I'd find whatever block of time he had. And then we would just start working on swing tune. He would just play some lick. And I'd say, wow, that's cool. And then, so we'd start there and then just go down some trail. And it was really, it's not like a formal lesson, but you know, he might have some tune in mind that he'd show me and then we'd take it from there. It was really, really fun. I love his playing so much.
It's such a great resource to have, like the Texas thing in particular, just having all these old timers around that are still playing and teaching and stuff. And
Well, the thing in Texas, there's hundreds of dance halls and there was no revival. I mean, nothing ever stopped. People, it's part of the culture here, the dance thing, you know, two-stepping and Western swing dancing and, you know, the dance halls and the barbecue and all that. It's just part of the culture here. And that's what's so cool about it. It's just, all these bands have been playing for decades and they just, you know,
just kept going.
They just kept going.
Texas is like that. It's sort of its own world of like, there's a lot of songwriters and stuff too, that just like never leave Texas because there's so many gigs and there's,
they don't have to. It's its own world.
This show is brought to you by the good folks at iZotope, who make incredible plug-in software for any music or dialogue recording situation. Among other things, they make a very unique suite of software called RX, which you can use to surgically repair almost any kind of issue in a recording. whether it's removing electrical hum, unwanted noise, vocal plosives, or almost anything you can throw at it. I use Isotope RX on every mix in one way or another, and I love that I can get in there on guitar tracks that I'm doing and running through my crazy old tube amps and get rid of the hum and noise without affecting the actual tone of the guitar. You can buy their plugins outright or get a subscription to keep up to date on all their latest versions. Right now, they're offering listeners a 10% discount on any of their plugins when you use the code SOULPOD10 at checkout. So head on over to isotope.com/soulpod, and you'll see the links right there to get the discount or an extended 30-day trial of their subscription service of Music Production Suite Pro. We're also brought to you this season by Black Mountain Picks. These are unique spring-loaded thumb picks that are super comfortable and adaptable. I've been using them for a couple years now, and I absolutely love them. They come in medium gauge, heavy gauge, jazz-tipped, left-handed, and with regular or extra-tight spring tension. Check them out at blackmountainpicks.com. Thanks to our other sponsor, Union Tube and Transistor. They're known for guitar effects pedals with a focus on quality and simplicity. They build durable, repairable products that sound amazing, both on stage and in the studio. I use their Sonebender fuzz pedal, the Moor pedal, and the Swindle overdrive pedal all the time in sessions and live on stage. You can find them at uniontone.com. And thanks to Spectra 1964. For over 50 years, Spectra 1964 has established a reputation of creating some of the most innovative recording equipment on the market today. From the legendary V610, C610, and 611 comp limiter units to the new 500 series Lunchbox mic pres and EQs, Spectra 1964 continues the legacy of providing incredible recording products for the home or professional studio. Check them out at spectra1964.com. And finally, the Henhouse Hang. It's a four-day immersive recording experience right here with me at the Henhouse Studio in East Nashville on September 19 to 22, 2022. Join us for a musical learning experience like no other. We'll put you up in a groovy hotel, feed you some glorious food, show you the ropes of recording roots and Americana music by bringing you in on a real session with real musicians working on real songs from the ground up. You can get all the info on that at stevedawson.ca. Just follow the links on the front page to the Hen House Hang. All right then, let's get back to the show. So what was your path to Texas? So you're from Massachusetts. How, like, when did you take the plunge? And also, like, musically, I read that you played other instruments, like you played upright bass and guitar and stuff. So how did you land on the non-pedal steel, and how'd you make the plunge to Austin?
Well, originally, I mean, I grew up in Michigan, and then I lived in 9 or 10 other states, you know, east and west, and then before I finally came to Texas. But I started, you know, as a child, I started taking piano lessons when I was 4 years old, and then just played at the other, you know, like folk guitar, and then clarinet in the school band, and, you know, just kind of went from there. And then
I played clarinet too. It's amazing how many guitarists and steel guitarists play clarinet. In doing interviews, that's like a thing. Yeah. Like Bill Frisell played clarinet.
Really?
Yeah. It's funny.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You know, usually there's a connection between bluegrass banjo or banjo players and steel.
Because of the right hand. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so I did get into, you know, I started playing like 20s and 30s Appalachian string band music. I got into playing clawhammer banjo and fiddle. And
how'd you get into that? Did you have friends that were into it, or what was the, like, what was the path to finding that music?
Oh, well, when I was in college in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and there were banjo players like down the hall. And so I just started, and I was working at a bar, and there was a bluegrass band playing. And I just got interested in the music, and then I got very obsessed by it. And all I did for, you know, was I really got into banjo and fiddle and started making, you know, going to the big fiddle conventions down in Galax, Virginia, and Mount Airy, North Carolina. And those were like yearly pilgrimages. And
those are more about like old time string band rather than bluegrass, right? Or is it just
both.
As much bluegrass?
Both. Yeah, they're both. Okay. It's pretty much half and half. And but you know, it was just great to go and hang out and listen to the older players. And you know, I mean, those were the records I was learning from. I'd go down there and then hang out and a lot of it's just seeking the source and try to find the older players. I think it's super important to me anyway, to lots of people.
Yeah, the fiddle tune tradition coming from that area in particular is really interesting.
It's, oh, yeah.
And so regional too, like Canada, parts of Canada have their own fiddle repertoire. Right. Western Canada does, Eastern Canada does, Central Canada, and then all through the Appalachian region. And like every little area seems to have their own set of tunes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the same, Texas has its own fiddle tradition too.
Right.
And, yeah. So, you know, from, so I did that for a long time and played in bands, did the folk festival circuit, and we had an all women band called the Heartbeats, and we played, you know, Merlefest and Telluride and all, you know, all the big festivals and Canadian festivals, Vancouver and
Winnipeg. I'm from, is Vancouver.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Great
festival.
Yeah.
And we did some European tours as well. And
who was in that band with you?
Oh, Taryn Evans was a fiddler. She plays in a band called Dawn of the Buffalo now. It's a kind of very popular.
I know that band.
Yeah. And Beverly Smith was the guitar player, and she does her own. She's still playing. Everybody's still playing. And June Ducker is the bass player. And
so, what were you playing in that band? Banjo.
Banjo and button accordion.
Button accordion.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you pick that up along the way too?
Well, we spent a lot of time in Louisiana. I really love the Cajun music too. So playing a lot of Cajun music and also playing the Zydeco music. And so I was in, so I was playing old time music and Cajun music and Zydeco music. And I was in bands and I was playing upright bass in a country band, like old classic country.
But you were still living in Massachusetts at this point?
I was in Massachusetts at that point. And
the hotbed of Zydeco music, Massachusetts.
Well, actually there's a big festival there in Rhode Island, believe it or not, that's been going for 30 years that all the Louisiana bands come up and play there. And so they've developed a community up there and a circuit for those bands to play. So it's kind of interesting. That's a whole nother story, but it was started by this poet who loved Louisiana food and music, and he just started this festival up in Rhode Island. And
the button accordion is really intense. Like that's a really hard instrument to wrap your head around. I've tried it a little bit, and you can't really relate to it in the same way that an accordion kind of makes sense if you've played some piano.
It's not linear like a piano accordion. So it's a different note in and out. It's diatonic and it's very rhythmic. That's what I love about it. And same with like playing the banjo with very percussive and rhythmic. And so actually it was in Louisiana where I first really heard the steel guitar that kind of blew me away. I was at a Cajun dance hall in, it's called La Poussière in Brobridge. And this band, Walter Mutone and the Scott Playboys, was playing. And this guy on steel, Randall Foreman, I'll never forget it. And he played this great rhythmic backup style and to Cajun music. And that's what turned me on to the steel guitar, because I was all into rhythm and melody, you know, and rhythmic kind of stuff, all the instruments I've been playing.
Yep.
And when I heard the steel guitar, I'd never heard the steel guitar played like that. And so that caught my attention. And
and he was playing lap or pedal?
He only used the pedal once in a while. He was playing a pedal steel, but he really just used one pedal just to go basically from the one to the four chord, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
And, that was super cool. And then,
so at that point, had you ever played steel or this
no.
was, that was okay.
No. So, so a few years after that, I ended up getting, I started listening to, it's almost like my musical thing was chronological. Like I went from the 20s and 30s, like old string band music, and then got into the Cajun and, you know, the Zydeco stuff, which that's actually more modern. But then I started listening to Hank Williams and Webb Pierce, like 40s and 50s country, and really liked the steel guitar on that. And then I started listening to Bob Wills and Western Swing, and then it was all over.
Right.
You know,
that's a deep well of steel guitar right there.
Yeah. And so I got a steel guitar. This is like back in 2000. I finally messed around with some pedal steels.
Yeah.
Then I learned about the non-pedal steel, and I thought, yeah, that's it. And then I heard that that's what they were playing with Bob Wills. They were playing non-pedal steel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
And they were doing all this amazing things on it. So,
yeah. What do you need those stupid pedals for anyway?
Well, plus the old bands, I mean, the steel player stood up and played, and that transmits a whole another level of energy.
Yeah.
You know, music. And
so what was the first steel you got?
The first instrument I got was the first straight steel I got was a carbon. It's a double eight, double neck, eight string carbon. And so I played on that for years. And then
is that like Carvin, like the amp company that made okay. They made double neck steels.
They used to.
Weird.
Yeah. Way back then. Yeah. They did it for a while. And, so I got a hold of one of those and then, later on I met someone who was selling his, Fender Stringmaster two finger. So I got a single neck and then he had a double neck. So I eventually bought the double neck too. And the double neck became, that's what I play now.
Right.
So that became
that same one. Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's like an early 50s probably, or mid 50s or something.
61.
Cool. And so when you first got it, were you learning strictly by ear, or did you take some lessons right away, or what, how did you figure out the basics?
The guy who, Kevin Maul, who used to play with Robin and Linda Williams, he's a steel player in the Northeast, and he sold me the carbon and he showed me how to tune it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much it. So
that
yeah,
was your that's a big lesson.
I was learning by ear from the records, and I just started learning from the Hank Williams records and Webb Pierce. And then I started just trying to learn. I was listening to Noel Boggs play on the Bob Wills Western Swing records. And so I was trying to learn his chords and find those. And yeah, so it was quite a journey because there was nobody around that even knew what a steel guitar was. At one point I drove 2.5 hours to Boston to play with this guy, Frankie Blandino. And he actually played straight steel. He's a great player.
Yeah.
And we sat in his kitchen all afternoon and just, you know, made jokes and just played steel guitar. And it was really cool. And, but it's kind of hard, you know, I felt like I was sort of in a desert, there. And I mean, I was playing with this little band. We had this little band called Girl Howdy, and we were playing early country stuff. We had piano, Paula Bradley on piano, Betsy Dawn Williams on guitar. And I was playing steel, and we had these guys playing bass and drums, and we'd set up for a show and the sound guy would say, okay, let's check the dulcimer.
I get that all the time too. I play Weisenborn quite a bit.
Oh God. And I just thought, I gotta get out of here, you know. Like this is this is not cool. And we were finding really great. We were digging for gold, you know.
Yep.
All through the old tunes and obscure stuff, and finding really, really great tunes that nobody's heard. You know, of course, never played on the radio. But still, it was like missionary work, trying to teach people. You know, people didn't know what we were doing or what we were playing or what do you call that? And so anyway, so now it's like, so about 10 years after I started playing, then I finally moved to Texas. And
so what was that like taking the plunge to Austin? That's a big deal. You know, like I moved to Nashville from Canada, so I can kind of relate in that way. Did you find it welcoming and, you know, kind of a great scene to be involved in, or was it tough to break into the world there, or how did you find it?
Oh, it's kind of a little of both. I mean, it was the first day that I came down, I just spent the weekend at Maurice Anderson's with taking steel lessons, right, up in Dallas. And then somehow the timing was perfect. I left there on Sunday morning and I got to Austin at 2:00. I went straight to the 290 West Bar and Grill.
Yeah.
Because they were supposed to, the Austin Steel Guitar Co-op was supposed to have their monthly meeting right at 2:00. And that's right when I arrived in Austin. So I went straight there.
Mecca.
And I walked into the bar and I said, I'm here for the steel guitars. And they said, oh, they canceled the meeting today. They canceled. And I went, they couldn't find a drummer. And I was like, what? And then the bartender goes, do you play steel? And I said, yeah, I'm a steel player. And then he goes, Herb, come over here and talk to this girl. She's a steel player. And Herb Steiner was at the bar.
Oh my God.
Hanging out.
Yeah.
And so that's how I met Herb Steiner. And we just, you know, and he was a steel player, and he immediately, just took me under his wing.
Awesome.
As a student. And said, okay, you need to go hear Bert Rivera at Art's Rib House, and you need to go hear this guy, and you need to go hear this band. And, you know, he just set up a little schedule for me.
Wicked.
And that was my first few minutes in Austin. So I thought, wow, you know, this
you
is
made
great.
The right call. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the place for me. And then
no dulcimers in that town.
And everybody, you know, all the old country tunes that we had been working on, you know, in my other band, everyone knew all the
standards.
Material.
Right.
Yeah. Standards in Austin. It was all standards. Yeah. There was no mystery or, you know, it wasn't quaint or anything. It was very current and everybody played it and it was part of the song bag. And
yeah,
I felt kind of normal. it was a new feeling.
Yeah.
And I also had a place to stay. I had Tom Pittman was a steel player and a banjo player with the Austin Lounge Lizards. And I had met him at festivals in the past. And he said, if you ever come to Austin, you can be our house guest. So I went and stayed with Tom and Elizabeth Pittman. I rented a little room and I stayed in that house for 4 years. I rented
amazing.
A little room there. Yeah, it was amazing. And all I did was I practiced all day. And then I'd go out to the clubs at night and go listen to people at night. And it was just...
There's your college right there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really
amazing.
Great.
So what year was that when you moved to Austin?
20, end of 2011. So,
okay.
And then officially, I was there for about a month and a half. And then I went back and put my stuff in storage and moved down.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and so after beating around the clubs for about 3 years, you know, I actually got a call from Wayne Hancock.
Yeah. So so you played with Wayne for a while. Like what was the deal there? Had he seen you play somewhere or?
Well, no, I mean, I'd been playing and I'd made a little record about a year after I was in Austin. I needed sort of a business card and I wanted to play these standards as well as Western swing. And, so I made a little record that I would just hand out as a kind of a business card so people could so I could explain myself, because I wasn't really playing straight up country. And
right.
You know, it's just hard to talk about it. So
yeah, just there listen. You go. There's a, yeah. yeah.
And great so idea. I did that. And
everyone had a CD player back then too.
Yeah. And yeah. also got it out to the radios, you know, there's Western Swing DJs and stuff like that. And
yeah,
got nominated for like a little
cool.
thing. And yeah. So got some notice, and I had met Wayne. I actually, back when I was in the Northeast, he played in Maine. I drove like 3 or 4 hours to go, or 5 hours to go see him in Maine. I brought my steel and everything. So he invited me to sit in at the last set. So that's how I got to meet Wayne the first time.
And nice.
Yeah.
So he didn't have a steel player?
Not at that point. No.
Okay.
So he'd been traveling for, he'd gone for a few years without a steel player.
Yeah.
And,
cause he'd been making records with Lloyd Maines, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Lloyd didn't tour with him. He just produced his records.
Oh no, he just produced the records. And no, okay. He always had great steel players though. He had Eddie Rivers mm-hmm. and, who then later played with Sleep at the Wheel for a long time. And then, Jeremy Wakefield, great player out of, on the West Coast. And so when I heard Wayne's records, I was like, oh my God, this is great. Cause it was kind of, he did some standards. He loved big band music, and he loved hillbilly swing music and, you know, hillbilly boogie stuff. And it was kind of the perfect
combination. Right up your alley.
Yeah. So I, you know, I had a sort of a secret goal, like, oh, maybe I can play with Wayne if I go down to Texas. And,
is he based in Austin, or was he then?
He used to be based in Austin, and now he's north of Dallas. He's in Denton.
Okay.
Denton. Yeah. And
so he just calls you out of the blue. He'd heard that you moved to Austin or whatever.
I'd been in Austin for about 3 years. And
yeah.
And, you know, I had that little record out and everything. And so his bass player, Huck Johnson at the time, who now plays with Dale Watson, Huck said, well, there's this girl who plays steel, and she's got a record out and everything. And so we had met before. So
did he put two and two together that you were the person that sat in with him up in?
I guess he must have. But anyway, he did call me. And so it was thrilling. I was like, oh my God, you know, I got the call. And so he said he wanted me to try, you know, let's do a little audition. There's this gig at this racetrack in Austin.
Yeah.
And so I said, yeah, okay, I'll be there. And it was a weird setup. There was several bands. They had a stage, and there's this tiny trailer, and everyone stuffed in it. It was raining. Yeah. And so everyone was huddled in the trailer. And you know, and I thought, oh God, this is my big chance, and I'm gonna, you know, totally blow it if I don't. I need to make sure Wayne hears me play. And yeah. The day before, I bought this little Honeytone amp. You know, it's like a battery.
Oh, the little tykes. Yeah, I know those.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah, they're plastic and
super distorted, and
yeah, they sound not so great. So anyway, but I brought it. Just I don't know why, but I brought it. And so, you know, we're sitting around this trailer and these other bands and stuff. So I decided, well, I have to seize this moment, you know, because it looks like we're going to be rained out. We're not going to be able to play. So I went off in the corner. I said, oh, I'm just going to warm up. And I went off in the corner. I set up my steel and I just started playing. And the bass player came over and started jamming. And then Wayne strolled over and was listening and started playing some guitar. And so I had to make sure that he heard that I could play. And
it's your audition.
Yeah, because it turned out we were rained out and we weren't going to get on the stage. So I just made it happen in the trailer, in one like little corner of the trailer.
Very resourceful of you.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like you have to seize the moment.
Yeah.
And so then he said, well, how about you want to come up to Tulsa? You want to play in Tulsa next weekend? And I said, yeah, yes,
hot
I
bang.
Do.
Yeah.
So we ended up, I met them in Tulsa. And from there we played Tulsa and someplace up in Kansas. And actually the first gig in Tulsa, we were just warming up And I ripped into some, like it was actually an Eddie Rivers solo. Thank you, Eddie. Yeah. I ripped into this Eddie Rivers solo. And Wayne looked at me and he looked at the bass player and he goes, "You got the gig."
Nice. Good
and
call.
I was like, yes. So it was super fun.
What was the gig like? Like, was he a road dog at that point? Were you out all the time?
Yeah. Well, we'd go out for like 3 or 4 weeks and then we'd be home for 3 or 4 weeks and then we'd go out for another 3 or 4 weeks. That kind
of thing. Okay. Yeah.
And it was really fun. It was like, it was a dream gig for me, you know?
Was that basically your first like touring steel gig since you'd started playing?
Touring steel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise I was just in a regional, you know, just regional band, but I'd always wanted to get on, you know, be in a road band. And so that was super fun. And
was that a good learning experience as far as like getting your chops together to play in that scenario?
Oh yeah. 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 Cause you played every night and, you were, and those playing with those guys, it was very encouraging and always saying, "Yeah, turn up and yeah, just go for it." So the attitude was like, yeah, you just go for it. And if you don't quite hit it or whatever, there's always tomorrow, you know, the next night you can try it again. And so you could really develop a lot of skills that way. And you could be
He was encouraging that way.
Oh yeah. He was great. He was, yeah, really great. Band leader and real, like, you know, he's an ex-Marine. So, you know, he was, we worked together. It was a pretty disciplined team and we all had our division of labor, you know, everybody had their spot in the van and they had their jobs that they did. And it worked well.
Yeah. So it was Wayne, you, and then bass and drums, or was it bigger than that?
No drums.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was, at the beginning, we had two guitar players. So we had Wayne, me on steel, and then two guitar players, Bart Wahlberg and Greg Harkins. And Greg Harkins played a hollow body, more jazzy, and Bart Wahlberg played a Telecaster, more, you know, we went through different bass players, but a doghouse bass with a lot of percussion.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy we worked with the most finally settled into was Harvey Crowder from Tulsa. Excellent player. And so it was Greg left after a couple years. And so then there was four of us. Yeah, it was really tight and disciplined and we worked together well. And
did you play on his records too? Or were you just touring with him?
I played the last on Sling and Rhythm. That was his last record.
Okay.
So I played on that and he actually, he asked me to write an instrumental for it, which that was the first for Wayne to,
Wicked.
So, yeah.
That's an honor.
So I wrote a twin guitar tune called Over Easy and Greg Harkins and I played twin guitar parts on it. And it's on that record, Sling and Rhythm. It's pretty cool. It was inspired, Over Easy is inspired by our frequent trips to Waffle House. one of Wayne's favorite places. And it's no accident that Waffle House and Wayne Hancock have the same initials. You see?
I do see. Yeah. I do see. So did Lloyd Maines produce that record?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So how was that working with a steel player as a producer? Was that cool?
Oh, well, it was super great. I mean, Lloyd he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And so he makes everyone totally comfortable. He came up with some cool ideas for just like intros or whatever.
Yeah.
And he knows, he's produced all of Wayne's records. So they have a great working relationship. And he's a steel player, so he loves the steel guitar, and you know, so it's very present on the record.
Did that make him want to get in there and like get involved in the way that your steel sounded or anything like that, or did he just sort of stay out of your way as far as that went?
No, but he was very complimentary, and he liked what I was doing. So
don't mess with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I've had him on the show, actually. He was a super nice guy.
Really nice guy. Yeah. He actually came up with the intro for Over Easy.
Oh, really?
That was his idea. Yeah. It's good. Yeah.
As far as what's next for you, you're going to do some more of these sort of EP kind of recordings. And I think it's a great idea. It's a cool way to get music out there these days.
I don't know. You know, COVID is still kind of going on. And so it's kind of, you know, just got to work around it. And
do you plan on taking your band out at all, like on tour and stuff? Or are you mostly just planning to stay based around Austin?
I think, it's really hard. A lot of the guys play in several bands and they play, you know, two or three gigs a day around here. That's how it, and so actually to get a band out on the road is,
an ordeal.
That's an ordeal. And so it's just not, I don't think it's very realistic. So what I'm doing is kind of what I do with when I go to the steel guitar conventions, I play there. I just go there with my charts and hand out my charts, the house band. And then we play these tunes and I'm playing a lot of standards. Mm-hmm. So I booked this gig in, Long Beach, California at the end of March and at the Secret Island Tiki Bar. And I'm going to be...
Oh, I know that place. I got a good friend in Long Beach.
Okay, well, my friend Dave Stuckey out there runs a bunch of bands. And so I'm going to open for his band and use some of his players. He's got a whole pool of players.
Yeah.
And he likes the record Wave. And so he's going to play drums and he's brought in a Vibes player.
Awesome. And my God. Jazz. I love that.
Yeah. Jazz fiddle player and stuff. So it's going to be really cool. And,
should make a live record there.
Well, yeah. I mean, anyway, so that's what I'm thinking is that I would go play with, I've done this before in the past. I have some swing, like these different swing pods of friend players that play swing music. And one in Lafayette, Louisiana, I've got some friends there. And so you can just
zip in and do a gig and zip out. Like, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And in Asheville, North Carolina, I've got some friends that play there. And I've done that, you know, where you parachute in and with your charts. And then we play. And I think that might have to be what I do for a while. But it's, you work it out. It's just a different way to navigate it.
And do you have a regular gig in Austin at this point? Like, do you play a weekly somewhere?
I play Sundays. I play Cocktail Steel Sundays at Samstown Point, which is it's a little roadhouse in South Austin. They call it the Alamo of South Austin. It's kind of one of the last remaining sort of independent, old school clubs down there.
Does it feel like all that whole world is kind of getting squeezed out? I guess it probably does, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of why I like playing at Sam's, because it's still got it's sort of a gravel road parking lot and it's easy to load in and it's not stressful. I like it.
Yeah. So what night is that?
Sundays.
Every Sunday. So anyone in Austin can see you Sunday night at that place. Yeah. Awesome.
And I've been playing with a lot with Dan Walton, who plays piano on the Wave record.
Okay.
And they also have a B3 organ in the club. So it's set up. So there's the piano and then there's the organ. So he can go between both of them. But we've started, there was one night that I couldn't find a bass player for some reason. And he said, well, we can just do an organ trio. And so we tried that. And it sounds really great. He covers all the bass lines on the organ.
Was he rocking the pedals?
No, he just has a great left hand. And he's a fantastic player. And so I think that's what I'm looking at, kind of an ergonomic steel.
I love the combo of organ and steel guitar. I think it's very
organ
cool.
And steel and drums. Yeah,
wicked.
It's really it's a cool sound. So that I think that's going to be my next little recording coming down the pipeline.
I like it.
I mean, Nashville has so many legendary steel guitar players, and that's probably where you're going to see them is at these.
I just went for a coffee the other day and Lloyd Green was sitting there. So I know the feeling.
There you go. Yeah. Lloyd Green was at a couple years ago at the Dallas Steel Show. And boy, he's such a great guy and he has wonderful stories. And he had, you know, I mean, there must've been 500 people there just riveted to him. And he's soft-spoken. He's a soft-spoken man. But he would just tell these stories, or he'd play the intro to a song, and the whole room would just inhale or just faint. And because everyone was tuned into the music, you know, they were all Steel fans. And he'd tell. Yeah.
And he's still really sharp. He's got all his moves in him
Yeah.
And he's funny though. Like it's like he almost thinks that people don't want to hear him play that much. Like he just wants to, he'll play the licks that he did on the song and then he'll stop. And I would just like to see him noodle away for like 2.5 hours, but
yeah,
he doesn't seem to think that people want to hear him or something. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is exactly, but he's amazing. And
he's amazing.
It's incredible that he's still around. And
That's the fun part of going to the Steel Convention is a lot of these guys who are legendary. You get to listen to them play and you get to hang out and talk with them. And it's just such a special time. It's really, I love it.
Well, I'll try and make it to the Nashville one. It sounds intriguing.
There you go.
Right. Thanks, Rose. That's really, it's great to meet you and good to talk to you for a while and hear all your stories. And thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, well, thanks for asking me.
Yes, indeed. That was my conversation with Rose Sinclair. Hope you enjoyed it. I had a blast speaking with her and bringing you this episode, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks for another grooving little episode of Music Makers and Soul Shakers. We'll see you then. Music Makers and Soul Shakers is produced at the Hen House Studio in Nashville, Tennessee by Steve Dawson. Please remember to subscribe to the show and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. You can find more info on this episode, including show notes and an audio playlist at makersandshakerspodcast.com. Thanks again to our amazing sponsors this season, Ear Trumpet Labs, Union Tube and Transistor, Black Mountain Picks, Isotope, and Spectra 1964. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.